Now, you also mentioned the trial looking at intraperitoneal therapy. Can you kind of go back a little bit and talk about the clinical research, which you were so involved with, that preceded this trial, and where we are right now in terms of clinical practice in the community in terms of intraperitoneal therapy?
Sure. In part because of that unique pattern of spread of ovarian cancer, most of the disease is in the peritoneal cavity, even when patients have fairly advanced disease. And with certainly good surgery, the majority of patients, even with bulky disease, you can get down to what we call optimally debulked, which means that the largest single implant is a centimeter or less. And the goal for the surgeons generally is to get patients down to be visibly NED without any evidence of visible disease. But because that's where most of the cancer cells are and that's where most of the disease is, you know, the thought was, can we exploit that? And so really over the years, really going back to the early 1980s, people have looked at whether there's a pharmacologic advantage for active agents in ovarian cancer by administering them into the peritoneal cavity. So you can have drugs like cisplatin, where you get about 70% of the drug you administer into the peritoneal cavity will get into the bloodstream based on the AUC. The peak will be much lower. The duration of exposure will be longer, so that does change some of the toxicities. But because of that, you actually will have a higher concentration of drug in contact with the surfaces where most of the cancer cells are for a longer period of time when you administer it into the peritoneal cavity, unlike when you give it intravenously where it's immediately diluted by the bloodstream. So certainly from a rational perspective, that makes sense. Almost all the studies, certainly all the phase 3 studies, have looked at a combination of intravenous and intraperitoneal because we've always been concerned about the potential for either occult extraperitoneal disease or even, frankly, you know, retroperitoneal disease, which still is stage 3 ovarian cancer, that you want to be able to adequately treat that region of disease. And we've usually limited to patients with small volume residual because the drugs get in by passive diffusion. So if you've got large bulky tumors, they're probably not well treated by intraperitoneal therapy unless it's absorbed and gets in via the bloodstream. So certainly the randomized phase 3 trials have used a combination of intravenous and intraperitoneal, and they have done it in patients with low volume residual after initial surgery. The different drugs you can look at, and most of the drugs we've been particularly interested in using in ovarian cancer, you can look at the specific pharmacokinetics. And, you know, if you look at cisplatin, we've talked about that pharmacokinetics. Paclitaxel is particularly interesting because it's a very large molecule and not terribly soluble, and it goes through first pass metabolism. So when you administer paclitaxel into the peritoneal cavity, you don't get much systemically. You know, you get a barely detectable level systemically, and it's about 2 logs lower than if you'd given it intravenously. So you really have a pharmacologic advantage for that. That may be good and bad, again, because if you don't get it systemically, you may not be getting any extraperitoneal disease treated. Again, why we've done these in combination.